It was rush hour at the top of the world this past weekend. It was the first stretch of clear weather during the spring climbing season at Mount Everest. 150 climbers went for the summit, almost 30,000 feet up. Some of them didn't make it back down. The death toll near the peak of Mount Everest is now up to 4. There's a climber still missing. But it wasn't an avalanche or a snowstorm, slipped footage that led to the tragedies. Instead, these people had simply started climbing too late in the day. Some of them had been waiting at base camp for 2 days for a chance to start that final climb. And then they began in the afternoon, hours after it's considered safe. As a result, they ran out of supplemental oxygen before they could safely return to their base camp and then died of altitude sickness and mere exhaustion just hours after standing at the top of the world. Joining us now is mountaineer Ed Viesters, the first and only American to climb the 14 highest mountains in the world without supplemental oxygen, and author of No Shortcut to the Top. He's also climbed Mount Everest 7 times. Is that right, Ed?
Yes, that's correct.
You know, first of all, for those people who don't climb, and most people don't climb mountains of this kind, explain what happens to you psychologically when you get that close to the peak. Are you more willing to make hasty decisions?
Well, you know, you've spent 2 months of your life climbing on that mountain, and when you're in sight of the summit, it's a very strong pull. Your ambition is very strong, and if things start to go wrong, if the weather changes, ambition usually overcomes common sense. And that's why a lot of people have troubles in the mountains, because they're pulled in a direction a lot of times that they shouldn't go. And in the end, they run out of energy. They've used a lot of their oxygen. It's taken them too long to go to the top. And then on the descent, in a lot of cases, that's when trouble occurs.
And, I mean, the descriptions of what happens in what's called the death zone are chilling. I mean, the fact of the matter is that there's nearly 200 climbers who've died there, and most of those bodies are still on the mountain because they can't remove them. Is that right? So you're passing, Ed, the bodies of climbers who've perished while you're trying to get to the top.
That's true. I mean, it's not like a battlefield. There aren't bodies strewn all over the place. There's the occasional body, and I've seen them. We do what we can to wrap them, to cover them, to give them some sort of semblance of privacy. But the sad reality of above certain altitudes on certain types of terrain in the mountains, it's literally impossible to bring these bodies down physically, and it's just too dangerous. And so we have to leave them there.
So you're constantly reminded of the danger of what you're doing, the fact that a mistake could be the end of you. At the same time, you have this sort of exhilaration of reaching the top of the world. And then what does that do to you psychologically? How does that either help or hinder your ability to make good choices?
Well, you know, like I said, on close to summits of some of the peaks I've been on, I've seen an occasional body. And for me, it was like a wake-up call. It's a beautiful day. Things are going perfectly. You're on your way to the top of this mountain, and you see a body lying there. And it's always reminded me that I need to be very careful, very conservative, because if I make one small mistake, that could be me. It is sad to see these bodies, but for me, it's like a reminder. Be very, very careful.
Although you yourself have talked about falling victim to this particular mentality, getting close to the top, when you were climbing K2, what happened?
Well, I was with two partners. We were on our way to the summit. We'd spent 2 months on the mountain. And on our way to the summit, the last several hours, it started to snow very heavily. And I started to contemplate not just the fact that we're still going up, but several hours later, we would be going down in tremendously deep snow, making avalanche conditions very hazardous. And I started to worry that if I don't turn around now before it's too late, you know, I could potentially lose my life on the way down. I asked my partners what they thought, but they had not even contemplated the descent. So I was kind of alone in my own, you know, quandary what to do. I knew I should have just unroped and gone down, but I kept putting off the decision so long that I finally found myself on the summit. And on the descent, it was horrendously dangerous. But when I got back down to camp that night, I was not happy or elated with my success. I was very angry with what I had done that day. And that just reiterated to myself that I needed to listen to my instincts. If it felt wrong, it was wrong, and you simply walk away and you go down.
We're speaking with Mountaineer Ed Viesters, who's the only American to climb the 14 highest mountains in the world. How often does that happen, though, Ed, where people plan meticulously for the ascent? And don't consider the descent perhaps quite as much in their planning?
It happens all the time. That's why a lot of people have problems on the descent. You know, a lot of times it takes longer to go to the summit, or because of weather, because of snow, they become tired. So the day is longer and longer, and by the time they're going down, they've spent most of the day just going up. And there's no resources, no energy, no daylight, no oxygen left for the descent. You know, it's a calculation you need to make. You have to temper your ambition. You have to make choices. But you can imagine if you're 200 or 300 feet away from the summit of a mountain and you know you have to turn around and you should turn around, a lot of people simply don't.
So we're speaking with Mountaineer Ed Viesters. And the place in which these people died on Everest was called the death zone, although we did have a less reported death on Mount McKinley, where a mountain climber fell 1,100 feet while trying to retrieve a backpack. And that climber was not roped to any teammates. And believe me, speaking as a complete neophyte who knows nothing about climbing, I think, why would you be on a dangerous mountain without being roped in? I mean, what happens while you're climbing? Does it just become so difficult that some safety measures are set aside?
It depends. It totally depends on the situation. There's certain mountains in the world, certain sections of the route that you can climb unroped. I don't know the particular area on Mount McKinley that this climber fell, but I've climbed in many places with partners when we weren't roped, simply because of the terrain. But if you take a misstep and if you hit a piece of ice or the terrain becomes steeper all of a sudden, you can't lose your footing because things can happen very, very quickly. For the most part, we try to safeguard ourselves with ropes, with anchors, but there are times when you unclip or unrope, and if you do, then you need to be very careful.
And of course, a sad day as we mourn the four climbers, one climber still missing near the peak of Mount Everest. Ed Viesters, legendary mountaineer, author of No Shortcut to the Top. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
You're welcome.